Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 216 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her political office. What? Yeah, man, talk about timely. Before we hop right into this show, just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. You know, I sit around here with my team and we look forward to hearing from you all the time. We want to hear your feedback. That's right. So make sure that after the show, you click on iTunes and then you have a moment to be able to rate and review. Yep, we love it. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Oh boy, talk about time. It's election time all across the United States over the next year. And our next speaker is basically Kate Black, the author of a really unique take on all of this as it applies to women. The title of her book is Represent, the Women's Guide to Running for Office and Changing the World while we're at it. Now, Kate is currently a policy advisor in the federal government and was formerly the chief of staff and vice president of research at Emily's List, the largest resource for women in politics. She also served as executive director of American Women, a nonpartisan research organization working to uplift the voices of women and the issues they care about. She's helped lots of female candidates get up and get elected, too. Wow, what a background. Kate, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be on the podcast.
All right, so let's look at some statistics here. This is kind of interesting. All of us, obviously, and this is from every party, independent, conservative, GOP, Dem, doesn't matter. What we're noticing is an emergence of more women getting involved all the way across the spectrum. And it's interesting. Women make up 50.8% of the U.S. population, but only 23.7% of Congress is actually female. Interesting stuff. You know, it's fascinating. I was looking at some of the history involved, and that was depicted in your book. The first female senator was Florida Republican Paula Hawkins, and she wasn't elected until 1980. First female to sit on the Supreme Court was Sandra Day O'Connor. And she wasn't nominated until 1981. It's interesting. I actually knew her. We shared for a certain period of time hairstylist here in Washington, D.C. Oh, my goodness gracious. And, you know, it's interesting. As we're looking at what's going to be happening going into the future, we have a lot of activity at multiple levels of politics, state by state, city by city. And so I think your book clearly is timely. What really inspired you to write the book?
You know, after 2016, after that election, my co-author and I, June Diane Refill, who's based in California, you know, we came together like so many women did after that election and thought, what can I do more? I need to be showing up more. I need to be doing more. And specifically for women, what can I do? And June and I had this idea to write a how-to guide for women who want to run for office, something that pulls the curtain back and kind of exposes it for what it is and not make it this mysterious process, but make it, you know, fun, enjoyable, and, you know, easy to understand. You know, I think for too long, for too many, politics has been held at, you know, an arm's distance. And with this book, it really, I think, invites all women to think about how campaigns and politics could work in their real lives.
Well, you know, I've been as many people have been, following what's been the experience for Marianne Williamson as she's been, as she cast her little hat in the ballot there to be able to run for president from the Democratic ticket. And it's been fascinating as she has been revealing more and more about the fact that this has not been fun. And that she has especially and surprisingly had a lot of pushback from her own party and has been experiencing a lot of surprises in it with respect to, you know, who has been more open and friendly to her and who hasn't been. She even noticed that she thought that the people at Fox News and the conservatives were more open to her than her own people. So when you mention, you know, this could be more fun, oh, I don't know, you know, is it really that much fun?
Well, and I don't want to sugarcoat it for anybody, right? Running for office, whether you're running for that Oval Office in the White House or, you know, school board or city council, it all takes work. It all is hard. But this book, I think, balances some, you know, accessibility about politics and kind of our civics when it comes to what offices you could run for. And just the fact that there are over 500,000 offices that are available to you. We also wanted to just open it up so that women could kind of enter into it, maybe in a way that they'd never seen before. You know, I think to your point about Marianne Williamson, you know, I think our presidential politics right now are interesting in that we have five women running for president, when just 4 years ago, we only had one. So, you know, that alone, I think, is something that this country's never seen before. And we're seeing it play out in real time, both, you know, on Fox News, on MSNBC, on social media, and on the debate stages. And I think everyone's trying to understand just what this means. But from my take, I'm just so excited that, you know, the young girl who's watching on TV or following along in this campaign can see multitudes of women represented in front of her. And there's so many different visions about what leadership could look like.
With your work, are you helping women of all of the parties, whether it's GOP or Dem or Independent or whatever?
Absolutely. This is a nonpartisan book that I think we hope any woman, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, Green Party, whatever, you pick it up and you're inspired to run. You know, it's no secret that certainly on the Democratic side, there are greater numbers of women in leadership and in elected office from that party, but also Republicans have elected some women as well. And if we're ever going to achieve any sort of parity, you know, it will take all parties doing their part. And I hope that this book can inspire, you know, any woman to run.
Yeah, I love what you just said. You know, it's basically a team effort here. There's no question about that. You know, there have to be unique challenges that women face when they're running for office. What are some of these, and how do you bring this out in your book, Represent?
Sure. So one of the unique challenges that has, you know, plagued women candidates is fundraising. We have not been a part of the powerful networks and the circles of wealth that men have occupied for so long, and that are natural places for them to seek powerful endorsements and contributions. And campaigns cost money. We know this. And so for women reading our book, we advise some great ways to understand, okay, just how much money do I need to raise? And the key point there is also raise that money. You do not have to be personally wealthy to run for office. You will be asking people for money. And so identifying that number, and then also thinking about, you know, you might not have access to those other circles of wealth that I mentioned, but you're a part of existing networks. And so we invite the reader to think critically about the places she exists currently, and using those networks to help fund her campaign. That could look like your sorority, your alumni association, your daycare pickup circle, maybe that softball recreational league you're a part of, maybe bridge club, maybe your church or your mosque or your synagogue. These are all places where you could make some initial second and third financial asks for your campaign. You know, the other
fundraising is a monster. And I really love the fact that you've come up with some really creative ways to do this because, you know, typically this has taken place in boardrooms, you know, across the country as one guy talks to another or on the golf course and all the rest of it. But clearly there are so many other options out there to be able to really make, you know, take advantage of. And so I'm glad you really brought that up. All right. Tell us about some more unique challenges.
So the other thing that I was just going to mention is that there are some internal challenges that women face, and that's a feeling of not being qualified to run. Now, that is an internal feeling, but it certainly stems from some external forces where women have just not been asked to run at the same rates as men. We're not recruited to run as the same as men. And that has an effect on us. When we don't see ourselves in leadership, we might not think we're qualified to be in that spot. And so one of the ways that we help readers kind of overcome this is by, you know, really embracing the notion that to run for office, you do not need to be, you know, older, white, male, lawyer, PhD, you know, have a ton of money at your disposal. What you do need to be is passionate about your community and that your expertise is what makes you an expert, your experience. Rather, makes you that expert for your community. And you're ready to go right now. You know, I think for us, we wanted to show the ways in which women hold so many identities, right? We're mothers, we're daughters, we're sisters, we're teachers, we're students, we're working paid labor jobs, we're working unpaid labor jobs. But in all of those things, leadership can be another thing that we do. And so regardless of what our day-to-day profession might be, you know, leadership and running for office could be that next step. And so in the book, we provide actually a list of all the occupations that the members of the last Congress held. And certainly there are some lawyers in the bunch, but there are also car salesmen. There are nurses. There are teachers and social workers. There are farmers and ranchers, counselors, union members. There are so many different types of people that have run and won before. You know, whatever you might have on your resume, surely it's good enough to qualify you to lead your own community.
Wow. Okay. So those are two huge, huge points. Now, a couple of my team members brought up something interesting when we were really considering this issue of unique challenges for women. Do you think women are judged more harshly because of their appearance versus a guy?
I think that women candidates are held to different standards than male candidates. And we provide in a chapter around appearance and clothing, we provide some guidance for women readers just so that they understand the landscape. You know, there is this dynamic of, do you try to change the system from the outside or you try to work from within? Our answer to that is really, let us give you the facts about research about, you know, who from people who've talked to voters and you can hear from them. But also, you know, I think the more examples that we provide out into the world of women leaders, I think the more that some of those maybe harsher judgments about appearance or clothing or stereotypes will hopefully fade away, because I do believe that there are power in numbers, for sure.
Huh. Because I think that, you know, it's quite fascinating. I think it's true of women who show up in the public eye anyway, whether it's a board chair or whomever. It's really fascinating to listen to the media. One of the first things they mention is what someone's wearing, right? If it's a woman, but if it's,
you know,
a guy, they never
absolutely
do.
Absolutely. And it is something that we wanted to address because, you know, for so long, leadership has worn a suit in this country, right? When a man shows up to a microphone wearing a suit, everyone kind of turns and looks and knows that this person in front of us is some sort of leader and should be there. Women have a different experience. And certainly that plays out on the campaign trail. And not just, you know, in kind of more formal settings where a man shows up wearing a suit and a woman can wear kind of a dress or a pantsuit or some other kind of formal outfit, but especially when it comes to casual wear. I mean, we kind of also have an image of what a casual male politician looks like, but for women, that looks different. And so in the book, we provided almost a choose-your-own-adventure for the women who come to us and say, I just need to know what to wear. Just tell me what my uniform is. I'll do that so I can focus on other things and I can communicate with voters. We give her some tips on, you know, places to look and things to buy. But for the woman who says, I know I'm showing up every day and interviewing with voters when I'm campaigning, I think I have a pretty good idea of what's in my closet and what makes me feel my best and makes me feel confident, I've got this under control, we say go for it. So we do try to arm as many women as possible with some basic tips about clothing and also the reality that they're stepping into, because that's important too.
Huh. All right. I've noticed something on the part of so many candidates at multiple levels now, and that is they're showing more and more good, bad, or otherwise, about their own personal lives. So you'll see people working out and, you know, just doing regular guy and gal things. Has this turned out to be helpful in terms of displaying who people are and who they aren't, or does it seem contrived?
Well, I think if it's authentic, I think it goes to helping make our elected leaders feel a little bit more like our neighbors. And I think that's a good thing overall. I think if we want to feel like positions of power are hearing from us and share some of our experiences, I think we want to see some of that reflected in their daily lives too. However, on the other hand, I think, you know, when put into the wrong hands or with the wrong intentions, I think it can feel contrived. But what we advise in the book is especially when thinking about social media, it's so important that for a woman who's looking to create, you know, authentic, meaningful communications with voters or potential supporters, that you are intentional about that message, that you are thinking about, okay, I'm about to hit post. Is this a post that I would be fine with a voter, a reporter, or maybe a volunteer seeing on the campaign trail? And if the answer is yes, then go for it. But if you're a little squishy about it and, you know, kind of like old milk, you sniff it twice and you're like, this doesn't feel right, then just get rid of it. You know, I think so much of our lives are spent online these days. We should be thoughtful about what we're putting out into the world.
Well, you know, segueing off that, that was my next question, which is, okay, we now live in the world of social media. And so if so much of our lives are online now, what's up with tweets and Facebook videos and Instagram, you know, pictures? What are your guidelines for dealing with all of this?
Well, it's such an important piece because I think, you know, certainly today's candidates are faced with this, but also the next generation of leaders, this is going to be doubly important for them because they might have had years of posts available for people to look at. So I think if you're looking at running for office, what we advise in the book is to sit down and really spend some time doing an inventory on all the platforms that you're a part of, even the ones that you might not think of as social media, but you know, maybe a dating website, maybe some sort of networking website that you're a part of or a professional association that has some sort of, you know, public messaging component. These are all places where you have put out messages and ideas and likes to the world. So you have to sit down and you have to really do a deep dive and an inventory about every post and every video and every image, because that is what matters. And so once you've done that hard work, it's much easier to say, okay, these I should get rid of and these I'll keep. The next thing that we advise potential candidates to do is to think about having a public and a private campaign social media presence. So by that I mean, you know, for the Facebook account that you created in college when Facebook was still new, you could make a private account and then just for you and your friends, but you could also create a public-facing account for your campaign that you share information about events or issue platforms or updates from the road. You know, that is a totally perfect place to share that information as opposed to your old profile where you're sharing it not only with potential voters, but, you know, maybe your old college roommate who you don't talk to anymore. So I think it's about making some of those choices about the postings, but also the ways in which you're going to move forward.
Now, we're watching tweets fly right and left, you know, from members of Congress and on and on. What are your guidelines for tweeting along?
You know, I think social media is a great opportunity to connect with so many people. But it's also something that I think we have to be cautious about. So to a candidate or a woman who's thinking about running for office, I would say, have an intention behind your tweet. Understand maybe in some conversations, you know, is your voice needed? And the answer might be yes. And if it is, crafting something that's thoughtful and engaging is worthwhile. But sometimes I think with social media, it's just as important to take a step back and think to ourselves, should I listen right now? You know, I think, is this a dialogue I should just be a spectator on for now so that I can maybe even learn something about an idea or an opinion that I might not know anything about yet? So I think social media can do a lot of good things, but I think it's up to the user to decide, you know, when to jump in, but also maybe when to open up their own ears and learn from what's happening in front of them.
I love it. It's a great way to be able to communicate. Do you think that women running for office should get media training?
I think everyone should have media training. I think especially women running for office, you know, having experts kind of understand how to communicate effectively, how to share ideas effectively, and especially when you only have maybe 1 or 2 minutes with someone or, you know, on a television program or a radio or a podcast, you know, I think being able to have some of those skills in your back pocket is so helpful. I think everyone should do it, frankly.
Okay, excellent. I mean, across the board, there's no question. But I really think that to be an effective communicator, you need to be able to sharpen your skills no matter who you are. We can all do with a little bit of refining one way or the other. It's interesting. I've been noticing on the campaign trail, for instance, when it comes to taking care of oneself, just, you know, kind of messaging through mentoring or modeling, a lot of people are, I notice the press really hops on top of what people eat on the road, because they go to all these fairs, you know, big country fairs, and they're sampling this and that and trying to be kind of, you know, one with the real folk out there. And yet at the same time, a number of them have also been touting vegetarianism and wanting to be able to be more plant-based and back and forth. So what I'm seeing emerge is more than just the kind of routine, you know, here, have the cotton candy at the fair. It's more like maybe we're also turning how we're eating and what we're eating into a message to the voters.
I think that's right. You know, I think the days of boxes on boxes of pizzas at the campaign office, you know, that still exists, but it might not be every day. I do think that, you know, one of the things we say in the book is that behind every woman candidate is a woman really just trying to, like, get it all done. And we invite the reader to not only think about how her own candidacy can reflect how she needs self-care or if she has a specialized diet to make that a priority. If she needs therapy or medication or whatever she needs to be her best self, to make that central to her days on the campaign trail. But also we invite the reader to think about the women that they might know who are running and remind that reader to not wait to be invited to help, but to just go up and offer. You know, so much I think we are kind of socialized to say, you know, well, I don't want to get involved, or, you know, she seems like she's, you know, making it all work or doing it all. But in reality, like, that woman candidate might need you to, you know, make sure her fridge is stocked with Diet Coke, or make sure that there's, you know, fresh groceries in the kitchen on the weekend, or that there's a healthy food in the fridge. Or just that her dog has walked, or maybe she needs you to take her to that spin class or take her for a long walk. You know, all of these things are ways in which that our community, especially a community of women, can help other women succeed who are trying to lead. And I think we should all embrace that a little bit more.
All right. So for the final takeaway, what is one key thing you want to make sure that women gain from your book, which is called Represent, the Women's Guide to Running for Office and Changing the World? Just one takeaway.
I hope every woman who reads this book takes away that they can do it, that your experience is your expertise, that you are qualified to run, and that if this book is standing in your way, don't let it. You should run today if you're ready, but if you're waiting, you know, men are not. And so you got to dive right in with 2 feet.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh, my God. This has been fantastic. Listen, we've been all listening to Kate Black. She is the author of Represent, the Women's Guide to Running for Office and Changing the World. And her website is Workman, that's WORKMAN.com. And oh my gosh, this has just been so enlightening. And hopefully it'll be inspirational to women out there kind of teetering on the edge of saying, yes, no, not sure if I want to run. Well, read the book and make up your mind. Listen, Kate, thank you so much for being on her podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation.
Awesome. And keep up the great work, for crying out loud. God knows we need it. And everyone out there, all right, here's your next official reminder to take a minute right now to hit iTunes and rate and review this show, because we're sitting here and waiting to hear from you. We want you to know that what you say is golden in our ears. Why? Well, because I'm Dr. Pam Peake, host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peake or Twitter at Pam Peake MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. And please stay well.